Welcome to Judgmental episode 23. We've got a huge special treat today. We've got three of us online at the same time, all in different continents on opposite sides of the world. So I've got myself in Sydney, I'm Guns, a regular host. We've got George Magnetic from the Netherlands. George, welcome.
How are you guys doing? It's my first threesome. I'm excited.
It's a three-way now. It is, just to get the times right, it's 8:38 p.m. on Wednesday night in Australia. What time is it with you, George?
It's 10:40 here, 10:40 in the morning here.
On Wednesday. And then we've also got Night Flyer, who I did my last episode with. Welcome, Night Flyer.
Howdy, howdy.
And what time is it where you are?
3:39 a.m.
Jeez.
Okay, so this is fantastic. We just happen to have all of us free at the same time. And we're going to do a full episode of Judgmental. Nightflyer's got to go to work in about an hour or just under. So we'll talk until then. And this will go out to all your regular podcasting, audio boom on iTunes, that kind of stuff, hopefully in the morning. All right, guys. So we've got a lot to talk about. So let's just have a quick chat about just recent games, I guess. We could talk about that first. We're going to talk about the JNAC, the warbands that the two main players, Alex and Shane, used in both the regular tournament as well as the draft. We're going to talk about zero cost magical artifacts and the cost the change they brought to the game, and whatever else pops in our minds. So to kick things off, Nightflyer and I had a game. Just after the last, I think the day after we recorded the last episode, and it was remarkable.
Yeah, it was in a couple of days,
Yeah, it was a remarkable game. Shane was pretty much ahead the whole time. I was using Isabel, and he was using Zim and Bale and Sana. That's right, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Out of the new ones. Oh, I had both of them. It was the first iteration of my Adepticon list.
Yes, that's right. You're starting to get it. Because, of course, we're going to have Bale and Sana, Zim and Isabel all physically available at Adepticon. Exciting, George.
When is that going to be, just as a reminder for you guys out there?
Yeah, we've got Adepticon is the end of March, pretty much last weekend of March, first week of April kind of thing. Looks like Bale and Sana are going to be out. We're going to launch them in an Australian con in January. So they'll be out a little bit earlier. But then Isabel and Zim will be out at Adepticon. So that's the current release schedule that we've got. So anyway,
physically be available to play at Adepticon?
Yeah, they'll be produced. Yep.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So they're going to be they'll be like normal stuff, you know, pre-order, and you pick them up at Adepticon. For EU people, the Fazils and Dorga cards actually went out. So they're in Firestore Games has got them, so that's good as well. They'll be physically available. So warbands. Anyway, so I played this game of Nightflyer. He was well ahead the whole time. I kind of grinded it out somehow. I'm not really sure how I got away with it. What was your take on the game, Nightflyer?
My take on the game was so. First things first. Let's be honest here. Dorgan, he is a thing you need to pay attention to and deal with and not leave to run through your entire warband, because that's how I lost, was I didn't pay attention to Dorgan. Additionally, the other big takeaway was Zim was an absolute monster in the early game. I personally believe he was a lot of the reason why I found myself in the lead. I had a number of heroes that kind of really took advantage of a lot of Agi 3, and that's what he can provide your army.
Yeah.
If you're able to get a bunch of Agi 3 stuff on the board, or make a bunch of stuff Agi 3, you can make your Bale and Sarna, who stole a Warble Blade, and Nephany, who bought a Warble Blade, just start to kind of go off, and that's really what they did.
Yeah. So your warband just was Bale and Sana, Cruel, Nephany, Skull, and Zim. That was the five. Mine was Isabel.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at I put the results in the stats app, so I'm actually looking at it, which is good. So mine was Isabel, yeah. Istariel, Kogan, Thrommel, and Zonya. And my recollection was Nephany had the Leech Blade and the Vorpal Blade, and she was going nuts. She was level 3 pretty early.
Buy the Leech Blade until later.
Right, yeah. Zim was causing me all kinds of grief. He was going off. Bale and Sana were annoying as hell. And on my side, I was kind of just tanking it up a bit with Thrummel, and I got the Thrummel level 3 pretty early. I got a bit of luck, and actually, we'll talk about that. So what happened was, what I did well that got me back into the game, and in the end, probably won it for me, was I manipulated the board so Dogger Khan was going to go to your side. I and he just went nuts, and I was pushing people into him, and it basically. Then the big turning point. This is a good one, George. So he had Krul, I believe, with two souls on him, and you cursed Zhonya, and then basically suicided Krul, thinking that Zhonya would get the soul, and the other
Well, this is
one.
before he this is before he had a soul, but yeah.
That's right, yeah. And you thought that because Krul will hand the soul off to a friend, you won't lose the soul, and you'll get Zhonya's back straight away. Now, because you cursed him first in the same activation with Krul, she wasn't eligible for the soul. So it actually went to Thrummel and made him level 3 or level 2.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was
It actually got him to level 2, which lets you get him to
level
level 3
3.
with
That's right. So
with kill.
that was definitely a turning point.
Oh my goodness. That's wow. That's I mean that's how curse can backfire on you, right?
It can. Yeah, it was a bad
Wow.
turning
I
point
hadn't
because
even considered that. That's a very fortuitous turn of events there.
when you're
Well, I
suicidal to
mean,
a
just
monster,
as a
sorry. Yep, you go.
As an impartial observer, if I may
Yep.
kind of
Yep.
chime in there, I think what it sounds like is that in the end, guns had a much more durable warband, and Nightflyer wasn't able to take full advantage of the early lead that he built up. And then I think in the mid game, just from listening to warband compositions, it sounds like it's maybe a little bit light on hit points,
Yeah, I think to be
some
fair,
grace.
like it did happen that way. But to be fair, I was pretty lucky. Like that was a pretty
Yeah,
lucky
of course.
thing. And like so, Nephany was had two souls and level 3 was on 16 health untouched, and I managed to drop her with my Zhonya because I pushed her into Dorg. Dorg did a massive amount of damage to her, and then I finished her off. So I think twice she lost heroes with two souls, right, Nightflyer?
Well, yeah,
Yeah.
Dorg killed Krul with two souls, giving one soul to Nephany, which brought her up to two souls, and then
That's right.
Zhonya killed Nephany,
That's right.
who then had two souls.
Yeah,
So,
that's right.
yeah, it
So, and then
was.
once Thrummel hit level 3, which I got there by the luck of, well, that
Yeah, I
misplay.
mean,
Yeah.
once Thrummel hits level 3, it's a clock. Like you're
Yeah.
gonna win if you have enough, if your opponent gives you enough time.
Yeah. And in the end, it worked out, ended up being 5-0. It was a remarkable turnaround. But Nightflyer got 10 levels. Every character
Wow.
was level 3. It was
Jeez.
so
That's
it was kind of
insane.
nuts, but it was a really, really good game. So anyway, it just has to show with the number of heroes, a lot of the new heroes, all the new magical items. Now, one thing I should have done, and I've talked about it since on Discord, is I should have bought the Null Stone's not used enough. I mean, he had two items on Nefany, two items on Bale and Sana,
That's
and
true, yeah.
yep, and
Yeah,
Bale and
yeah.
Sana, they rely on the Vorpal Blades and the Glyphs of Warding to be res two, and I just didn't buy it, and I should have bought it. I had opportunities, and it would have made the game a lot less painful for me if I would have done that. But anyway, yeah, that was my
Well,
take.
but that's a good thing because it means that the cumulative effect of stacking magical items on all of your characters and getting them to level up is actually like significant, and it has a you know it's not trivial. It's something
No.
that you really have to take into consideration, A, when you're building your warband, and B, when you're playing the game, like the dynamic choices that you make and how you buy your items response to that. So that's a good point.
Yeah,
It
I'd
sounds like
actually.
a crazy game.
It was.
Yeah, just one little final thing about that. One thing I would really look for, if you're playing against a Bale and Sarna, every time that I've played them and someone's bought a Null Stone against them, it's been very effective. So if you're having trouble with Bale and Sarna in the near future, think to go ahead and purchase that. Don't be afraid to just buy it off your effigy and put it on a tank or something, because it can really mess with what they want to do.
They are a hero in my opinion that does rely on stealing the magical item and getting the res item, and all of a sudden there's a res 2 tank that could split damage. And so anyway, I think that was Yeah, it was a good game. And yeah, it was great. So I think next thing that we want to talk about maybe is the JNAC warbands in a bit more depth. I wrote an article during the week, a news article that talked about them. So I think we'll go through in two phases. We'll talk about the ones they used in the standard event. So what happened was there was 20 players, so we had four rounds, and they were just pick and ban, so seven heroes. And then because there was two undefeated players, we basically stopped the tournament, and just those two players did a full 31 hero draft, which included Fazil, and played a game, a one-off game to decide the title. The two players we're talking about were Alex and Shane York and Alex Najdek, I think it is. I don't know how to pronounce it properly, but that's how I say it. So yeah, anyway, I'll go through. So Shane's warband in the standard tournament was Dohnrakha, Marcus, Svetlana, Krul, Thorgar, Zhonya, and Bastion. I commented at the time that he's got basically two defenders, two soul gazers, two melee aggressors, and a utility support. What are your thoughts on that warband?
Nightfly, why don't you go first? I think it's a pretty old school warband. I know a while back, like when I was first getting started, Colin Hill actually won a pretty big tournament over there in Australia with a similarly designed warband with that kind of setup, with doubles all of the big three, and then Bastion to kind of tie it all together.
And the other thing about this one as well, like the most of them are wave one heroes. I think Zhonya and Svetlana are wave two, but the other five have pretty much been there since day one, which was remarkable. I think it's another thing that's remarkable. So, I mean, it's good testament to the game that we'd haven't got, obviously, I don't have hero creep because he's using none of the new heroes. And it was also good to see Bastion figure because Bastion's kind of fallen off the meta a bit, I think.
No,
He
a little
has.
bit.
He's kind of been overshadowed by some of the more recent and more flashy support heroes. I think as soon as Styx hit the scene, I think Bastion's popularity dropped a little bit because he's kind of filling up the same slot and he has like these really big, crazy, potentially game-winning spells and abilities. So Bastion, he's less flashy but more reliable. He's a German support hero. He's like he doesn't do anything special, but what he does very quickly.
He also is similar to Gendrys and Haxxar in terms of 3-inch reach and utility. And
That's true,
like you said, they provide a lot more offensive power than Bastion, who provides basically none. But with
Exactly.
the right.
I think that's also the other two main competitors are Haxxar and Gendrys. And I think Haxxar really purely because of like the aesthetic and the way that the model came out in the end, I think he kind of has surpassed Bastion. Because it's kind of like the same vibe. You're like, well, you know, I'm giving up a guy with a long stick for another guy with a long stick. Except this guy has like totems and he has a really cool fade ability that I want to use every turn. And so, and potentially more, he does more healing because of the AoE healing. So if you want to go down the route of having a really tanky healy warband, you're going to take Bastion before you take, you're going to take Haxxar before you take Bastion.
And what are your thoughts,
Right.
Nightfly, in the US meta where you are?
Well, I mean, you say the US meta, but let's be fair. I'm mostly Vassal meta. It seemed to me like Haxa was the one that really kind of brought him down a little bit, because Haxa got his equilibrium heal and damage thing that he does got brought up a little bit, made a little bit more reliable. At the same time, Bastion's heal got nerfed from the D6 to the D3 with the alongside the addition that he has to it, and it kind of been like, oh, Bastion just like this guy does most of the stuff that Bastion does. He has a little bit of damage instead of the extra dice to friendly heroes. He has a really good heal that also, but it also does true damage. And the big thing is, Haxa doesn't just die to things. I used to kind of be scared of Bastion, but anymore when I see him on the table, I just kind of target him out, and he kind of dies pretty quick as soon as
Res
he
one makes
engages.
a big difference
On
here.
Haxa, yeah. And the thing about Shane's warband, though, was that when you've got a Zhonya, a Thorgar, the new Krul, who can with a soul as a monster, Marcus and Dohnrakha, Bastion's aura is unbelievable in that warband. So I think he's chosen it well. And if you do ban the Bastion in that warband, he can put a lot of powerful things together out of the other six. Now, looking at the stats app actually, so Bastion's got a win rate. So in since patch 8, he's been played 28 times that they've put the results in. He's got a win rate of 23% on Scorched Earth. So he's won 5 times, which is the second lowest. And on Cobblestone, he's had played 14 times and he got a 7 wins, so he's 50%. So he's still getting used. He hasn't got a good win rate, but to see him be in a warband that took the title, well, went undefeated for the first 4 games, I thought was pretty good. And it was good to see him just be back in the swing of things again. The other thing about Shane's warband, it's a good classic, Zhonya and Thorgar. I think either Rakir or Thorgar or Nefeni and Thorgar or Zhonya and Thorgar, because they're all fate heavy, Zhonya, Rakir and Nefeni, where Thorgar's not. He's a very good complement for those other ones, I think. The high burst single target damage. And that was interesting to hear that combination going as well.
Well, the Thorgar Zhonya combo is pretty much your most effective two-man damage package that you can bring to a warband selection. And the way that he's got it, he can run them both at the same time on the field without any problems. He doesn't need any of their fate. And if he does use fate on Zhonya, he'll only ever use it when he's guaranteed to get that fate back, because he's going to be getting a soul and he gets it back at the end, start of the next turn.
Yeah.
And then that leaves you with the fate to use your defender's fate abilities, mm-hmm. which can be really game-breaking. Dhonrakha is incredibly strong, because if you go into the right warband with Dhonrakha, if they have like reach one aggressors,
yeah.
Dhonrakha will just crush them. And if you can spend that fate every single turn on Donny and his resilience 3, then you have just drained, I don't know, 15 points of damage from your opponent's warband, like damage output for that turn.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is.
Especially when you combine that with Svetlana as your Soul Gazer. Right?
It's actually pretty tanky.
It has 3 tanks.
It's a pretty tanky warband. Yeah, I mean, like, because if Krul's got a soul, he's got 1 res. Svetlana's got 2 res in combat, 1 otherwise. Marcus has got 2 res. Like, it's actually quite a tanky warband as well. It's deceptive.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, let's go take a look at Alex's warbands. Yeah. And if it is Alex Natchek, then we got to give a shout out to the Judgment Day podcast.
We do. And they've been promising another episode, but they haven't done one for a little while. So hopefully they'll get that together. Alex's warband.
Well, technically now we actually can do a 3-on-3 podcast showdown, because with Nightflyer we have an official third member to the podcast.
We don't have to take Jeff the imposter. That is so true. Maybe we can do that. Right, Alex's warband. Zaffin, Thrommel, Cavato, Lauribella, Skull, Brock, and Krul. A couple of things stand out for me. Thrommel, was good to see him in one of the major warbands. Same as Zaffin, not that fashionable. Laurie, like, he had a lot of, you know, I guess he had the Cavado, Thrommel, Cavado, Zaffin combo going, so that was really good. But he's only got one proper aggressor, well, one melee aggressor on Brock, and the other one, Zaffin. What were your thoughts, guys, on this one?
I think he's probably going to be running Lauribella as an aggressor in this matchup. Actually, he's got Zaffin. Zaffin is a good aggressor. I mean, he's got the double dwarf Cavato combo, which is really savage in a pick and ban matchup, because if you don't ban one of those 3 heroes, then you let that go through, then it's really bad for you.
Yeah.
Which is a shame, because Lauribella and Krul and actually Brock are really good ban targets as well. In this matchup, I probably would end up banning a Brock just to be like, okay, guess what? You have no melee at all, and then let's dance at range.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's potentially weak, but
he's got a good combo. He's like Lauribella level 2, giving +1 speed to Thrommel, Brock, herself. Like, I think there's decent combos in there. What do you think, Nightfly?
Absolutely.
So I didn't actually play against Alex, but I was hearing a little bit of the chatter around it in terms of talking about it. One of the things that the Zaffin Thrommel plus Zaffin and Gavardo, that was kind of like the bait. So you'd see a lot of even though he only had the one melee aggressor, if they banned Brock, then he had he had full access to the Gavardo plus two really big weapons that he could fire extra times. So like Gavardo can go and walk and pull someone out of engagement with Zaffin, and then have Zaffin shoot them, and then Zaffin activates and then shoots them like two more times and just one round someone. It just because his damage potential is just that good. But if they stop that and ban Gavardo, then he has a full five band list that because he can just drop Thrommel or Zaffin, and he just has a really good five man list, and he's just really happy with that. It's actually really cool. So having that really powerful synergy to kind of take away can kind of cover up the holes in a seven man that's usually. It's an interesting way to go about it. You know, you don't see that kind of thing too often.
I've got a fun little memento here. I've actually never lost a game to Zaffin. So I would, if I were to play Alex, I would actually want him to put Zaffin on the table, because I'd be like, oh, cool, I'm playing a 5v4.
Poor Zaffin, that's a bit harsh.
Well, it's partly because of the type of warband I play. I play like a hyper mobility teleportation warband and monster interaction warband. And for me, it's the easiest thing in the world to just pull Zaffin across the table and put a monster in his face and then be like, all right, have fun for the next three turns trying to get out of this.
Yeah.
So there are ways to play around that combo, the three-man dwarf combo. One, you can just... If you have a lot of teleportation stuff, you can really punish the dwarven side of it, and then they have to spend activations like double walking or triple walking to get into position, and then Cavado's mind control just brings them up to parity instead of boosting their damage to really crazy levels.
Yeah.
Or you can just dive Cavado, make sure that he never gets a level 2. If you can stop Cavado getting a level 2, and you have like a ranged aggressor or something, if you get Alan Deer, just pick Cavado, and he can go forward and mind control Thrommel to swing on one of your guys, but then he dies. And then you just farm Cavado for kills, and then the dwarves are kind of like a bit kind of left behind.
Well, he managed to get through the tournament four rounds without losing,
is very good. Yeah,
yeah, it is. Once again, it was a warband that none of the new heroes again. It's all wave one and wave two stuff. I guess Laurie technically was just outside of that, but it's interesting. So I think, and also like Zaffin's pretty unfashionable, really. Thrommel's got some detractors and some people who like him, but yeah, I thought both warbands were really good indications of the health of the game, because they didn't kind of have, yeah, I don't know, a lot of the new stuff wasn't there, and they had a lot of traditional stuff in there that seemed to work. So anyway, they both went through to the final, and then they did a 31 hero draft. Now, I'm a big advocate of the draft. I consider myself, well, I've been doing them for a long time. I tend to go pretty well when there's a draft involved. It's a game within a game. It's a skill, and by the sounds of it, Alex got pretty much outthought in the draft. His impression was he was gunning for Jaeger at one stage, and Shane just knew that was the one he wanted to ban, and banned it at the right time. And that just having one of those things happen can really throw you in your draft sometimes. Let's go through the warbands. So Shane's was, and Shane did win the JNAC. It was Haxar, Nefini, Zonya, Marcus, and Svetlana. Thoughts?
I like it a lot. It's...
Yeah.
It's not a combination you see a lot of the heroes. Like, I don't think this is not a... Yeah, this is a draft warband. This is not something that you would see in constructed warbands, I think. I don't think people would try to build towards this combo, but if you take it all into account, like, there's a lot of really cool synergy. So you have 3-inch reach on Haxa helping add dice to Nefany and Marcus. They both really like dice. You have enough defensive capabilities in Marcus and Svetlana. You have enough res to take care of shrines and monsters. You have definitely enough melee damage output, which is great. You have Nefany, which gives you a lot of extra added mobility, so it's hard to get outmaneuvered, which if you take Marcus and Svetlana and Haxar, you can kind of outmaneuver that kind of warband because they're not super fast. So Nefany really kind of balances
that out by being able to provide you something to, you know, hold a flank, dive deep on an enemy hero, or just project a lot of threat throughout the game, while Svetlana just quietly sits in the background and wins you the game by soul harvesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know Nefni and Zhonya are both really is actually kind of a go-to, is one of the go-to heavy melee aggressor combos that I've seen out there. Haven't seen it talked about in a while, but because Zhonya usually goes for the monster kill and gets the and buys some agi boots. So you got double agi five. Hard hitting melee aggressors. You got Nefni kind of dancing around, and then Zhonya being, well, Zhonya and applying axe to face. And it's kind of like a hammer and anvil situation. You can either run away and have to deal with Nefni, or you can go into it and deal with Zhonya. And you got hacks at healing everybody up. It's a really solid.
It also has a very strong turn one setup, right? So you. What you do is you bring Haxa up the table to assist the monster with 3-inch reach. Zhonya like kills the monster with like 99.9998% certainty, because you're never going to get more dice, right, than an assisted Zhonya. Then Nefni can dive in on top of turn one into your opponent's hero that they send at a shrine or something, and either push them or curse them out.
Yeah.
And then Marcus can go up and take it, and Svetlana runs up the board to Soul Harvest like at the top of turn two.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you have like three separate threat vectors coming at you at the same time that are going to force you to make really hard decisions on who you activate first and the second turn.
And the final was played on Scorched Earth as well. So I think Svetlana always is good on that map as well. So is that Nightfly's alarm?
That's why I wake up and get ready for time. I forgot to silence it again.
2 weeks. Sorry. That's so good. That's so good. All right. So, So Thought Shane Warband looks good. Let's look at Alex's one. Now, he had Zaffin again and Brock, Shan, Rakir, and Zarin. Now, once again, it looks kind of balanced. He's got two good melee aggressors in Brock and Rakir, a solid defender in Shan. He's got Zaffin for a bit of ranged aggression, and he's got Zarin. Now, the thing that stands out for this one to me was he doesn't have healing. There's no kind of, he has no soul stripping ability. And it's kind of a list that does what it says on the tin a bit. I guess he's got Zarin to mix it up a little bit. I don't know. It still looks pretty solid. I don't think it's a terrible warband either. What you guys think?
It's really fate heavy, but other than that, it's not terrible. I think like so is Shane's.
They're both fate heavy. Yeah,
they both have three characters who once spent a lot of fate, and even Zarin, if he doesn't get a soul early, is going to be wanting to spend fate as well to get them skeletons out.
Yeah, I think the fate cost really means that you're going to spend the vast majority of playing being at less than 100% efficiency.
So you're
always going to be playing at 80% efficiency or something like that, unless you manage to get like 5 fate in a turn, in which case you're winning anyway. So it's a win more list, which is tough because it has no way of recovering from any kind of negative cutbacks. Like if your opponent, you know, gets lucky on where the soul spawns and spawns on their side of the table first, they pick up a quick soul, you have no way of mitigating that. You just have to deal with it. Or if you, I don't know, if one of your guys gets killed, you have no way of saving that soul that you gathered. So you have to play really, you would have to play it super, super, super safe and just try and grind it out over a longer period of time.
Now, when it comes to high-level play, there's also a lot of subtle things you don't automatically or immediately see. Alex's warband can't apply curse, right? Shane had Nefni and Haxar. So to me, there was not a lot of tricks. Like you basically, and like a Zaffin and a Rakir pretty much want to be spending fate all the time. Even though, like, Haxar doesn't have to do it all the time, right? Haxar can still do his idols and still do that kind of stuff. He doesn't have to do it every time. I just felt, even with the soul gaze, if you're not getting skeletons off Zarin, then you're not getting the most out of Zarin, whereas Svetlana doesn't really need to spend fate either. So I just felt, yeah, I think, I mean, it's a draft and it's always difficult to, you know, it's 31 hero draft in a big pressure game. I still think the Warband's fine. It could definitely win games. But when you look at it deeply from a high-level player, I think, yeah, I think it's got flaws, which in the end he lost the game as well.
Well, another thing to look at with Alex's Warband is that Rikir does actually has a lot of support within the Warband itself. So you've got ability to apply poison from range with the zap
and
poison and knockdown.
Yeah, that's true.
And potentially even knockdown, yeah. So, like, if you only have one fate available to you for that turn, you'd have Zaf and try and apply the poison from range for Rikir to come in and then blow him up with toxin, even if he doesn't get, like, a great like, walk charge off. You can have him come in and poison and then, like double walk poison, toxin and then jump out of there to try and grab a kill and be really secure with it. You also have Zarin, the ability to provide extra mobility for Rikir by having the ability to put out two really, really impactful and well-placed shadow orbs early on in the game. So if he was really focused on that, like I haven't seen the gameplay, so I don't know how much or how little he played into that, but he has a lot of synergy for Rikir built in there, along with an anvil and Sharn and a hammer and Brock. That he can kind of play those two on a flank and make it so that way they have to deal with him. Also, Brock can just farm bait really easy for killing monsters.
It's actually really good observations you made there. I think the Zarin Rikir and Zafin Rikir combos are great. And you're right, Brock can produce fate just by killing monsters as they spawn, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alex's Warband is the kind of Warband you would want to bring during the pick and ban stages of a Warband, because this is the kind of it's very synergistic, but it has very specific and very strict synergies. So if I'm fighting against this Warband and I find a way to shut down Rikir, like to either steal his kill or to just like snipe him down to like 5 hit points, like on the top of turn 2. Whereby he can't go in without dying, basically. Then you can turn off a lot of the buttons that make this Warband run. So, which means that if you're playing this Warband, you need that much more practice playing into the things that counter you, so that you know what to avoid and when to play it safe and when you can commit. I think that's the hardest part. Is when do you commit the pieces and how do you allocate your fate spending in this Warband?
Yeah. And I think that I think in that situation, obviously Alex doesn't get a chance to get used to using the Warband or using, you know, like it's the game is available. Nessie knows, who's been a great fan and player of Judgment supporter. He recorded it, and if you go to the website judgment.game and go to the news section, there's an article on JNAC winners and stat analysis, and the video's embedded, so you can actually watch the game, including the whole draft. So if you're new to the game, you want to see what the draft's all about and see some really high-level play, then that'd be the one to watch. So the video's on there, so please check it out. As we said, Shane won the inaugural North American Championship. I wasn't there, but Jeff, I went to that one. Jeff's been sick since he got back, actually, the poor bugger. So he's a bit under the weather, but he had a great time. And we're looking forward. I'm going to Adepticon next, so I'm pumped for that. And it's going to be huge. We're doing the same thing, the same format with a 3v3 tournament and a 5v5 tournament. And I can't wait to get stuck into it. So, cool. Now, next
topic. Just before, one second, let me interrupt you real quick. Just before we finish up talking about JNAC, I got to give a shout out to my man Jaden, who in the 3 out of the 4 games that he actually played, did go undefeated with the greatest warband of all time. There was one small change. Yeah, that was the cruel change. That's right. Yeah, we modified the greatest warband of all time to replace Cavado with cruel because we since the patch level 2 cruel is equivalent and better than in some cases a level 2 Cavado.
Excellent.
But he was very happy with the warband, and it's been performing well. And hopefully we're going to be seeing it at Adepticon.
if he can make it.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, if you can do it again, that'd be fantastic. All right. It might be a bit more refined by then as well. You never know. Because we'll have he's a big fan of Bale and Sane. He talks about him all the time on Discord as well.
Yes. Yeah. He's been doing a lot of play testing with Bale and Sane, and we're thinking about maybe potentially swapping out Fazil for Bale and Sane.
Ah, interesting one.
So we're still kind of deciding on that one.
Okay.
They're weird.
Sorry, not fly.
Oh, they're very weird. They really warp a warping composition to a pretty extreme extent.
Yeah. And your playstyle.
To see how you guys try and fit them in.
Yeah, well, I'm personally also going to be making a new band, and I'm going to be including Bale and Sane, and I'm thinking about potentially bringing a quintuple teleporter warband.
All five of them.
five teleporters.
What is that? Victor, Bale, and Sana.
You can't Victor, even... yeah. Victor, Bale, and Sana. Sticks. No, not Rikia. Probably Cavado, okay. Because he teleports other people. And then also maybe Sky.
Okay. Don't forget, Zim can do it now too, don't forget, because he can switch with...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Zim, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I could get Zim and Victor in there as my range package. I can get Bale and Sana in there with Styx as my support package, and then Sky as my defender. And then, of course, add the obligatory Thorgar.
Yep, yeah, of course. Nightfly, have you got any changes at the moment for your Adepticon warband you played against me, or are you sticking with it for now?
So the big change that I've been thinking about for a while is Skull. So the full warband is Nefeni, Thorgar, Zim, Bale and Sarna, Skull. I think it's Sharn.
Yep, Sharn's there.
And then I'm trying to remember who my seventh. Oh, Cruel.
I banned Sharn in that game, and then you dropped Thorgar. That's what
happened. Yeah, because you didn't have any. You didn't bring any of the usual counters to Bale and Sarna, which are like Galore, Bella.
Yeah,
because Sticks. Also, Dwarf Male is really nasty with them. Sticks is really good. Sharn is really good.
Yeah.
You didn't have too many of those, so I thought that they might be okay in there still.
And they did okay in the game, actually. They did fine. It took me a while. Because I couldn't split them up easily. It took me ages to kill them. I did eventually, but you banned my Dunraka because you had Balasar and Nefeni, and he can wreak havoc against them. And then I dropped my Zyvira. So, but yeah, no, interesting. So for now, you might swap in Skull. Do you know who you're going to swap him for?
I thought about swapping Skull for another one of the defenders, possibly Thrommel.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that aggressor package in the JNAC.
Yeah.
Just a really solid damage dealing bruiser combo. But Skull kind of fills that role as well. One of the bigger problems that I found in the warband selections, I had a lot of heroes that wanted to get to level 2. Bale and Sarna obviously want level 2. Skull wants level 2 because his warrior head really kind of turns him on as on his ability to be a bruiser. You want Nefni to get level 2 so she can start setting people up. So you have all these characters that want to be level 2 and only so many monsters to kill, even if you do manage to pull off a steal with Bale and Sarna.
Which you did in the game against me.
Yeah, I did.
And what you did against me is...
You considered maybe playing it in such a way that you get Nefeni the monster kill and then don't buy any items and then buy a tome of experience from one of your other heroes from your effigy and level him up to level 2?
No, like because Zim. I don't mind Zim being level 1. I don't really play him as the he kind of feels more as like an enabler and a finisher, because he has the ability to do 5 true damage before an action and a fate with between consumed soul and his fate ability, and then he has a couple he can usually throw in a really good attack in there. So like a couple things that happened during the game is you get a hero that was down pretty low, and then Zim just came up and killed them without needing to roll dice, and put the soul onto someone who's going to keep pretty safe.
Yeah.
So that felt pretty strong. But he, I don't really feel like he needs to be the one that I'm focusing a level up strategy, especially in an LS with both Bale and Sarna and Skull, who I'm planning to use as a bruiser. Mm-hmm. If anything, what I do is I'd have Skull charge in, kill a monster, and then give an item to like a Nethni or something. But that would be a lot more work because
get himself a Vorpal Blade. I mean,
yeah, he's really good with the Vorpal Blade. That's the other issue that I have is I have two heroes that really want to have a Vorpal Blade.
Yeah.
I might need to consider not getting a Nephany that and giving it to Skull instead.
Mm.
Actually, that was the plan because Skull decided to whiff on Gloom super hard.
Yeah, he did.
And
like
with a friend charging in, he did like 2 damage over 4 attacks. It was terrible.
Now, having Zim in a warband, he does open up opportunities like that where you don't have to give your main a melee aggressor a Vorpal Blade because you're going to be fighting AG3 people a lot, and you can afford to give the Vorpal Blade to a Skull who will then get 3 dice against AG3 people. Like, it's interesting. Zim really spins that around. I think it's going to take some time for people to get their head around how clutch it can be to do multiple people AG3.
Yeah,
I think there's going to be... The meta will grow as he becomes more and more popular.
Also, a nice interaction between Skull and Zim is that you can activate Skull first, put it into position, drop a Bulwark on Zim, like drop a Bulwark first and then walk into your opponent, and then your next activation, you put Zim, teleport him there, and then ulti on everyone, and then you're walking around with Bulwark and you can retreat and chances of them being able to kill you, especially if you have the level 3 ability where you can, you know, curse one of the guys, not curse one of them, but you know, put the damage sharing ability on one of the guys and then walk away. That's pretty scary.
And yeah, that's true. The other thing about Zim, right, is when he does that, what you described just then, so swaps a Skull and he's got the Bulwark, don't forget all those people around him are -1 to their basic attack damage. So, like, your opponent's going to have to spend fate to shake this stuff, or it's going to be just even less damage as well. It's pretty powerful. I think, yeah, he's got a lot of room to grow, I think, when people start to use him more. And even then, he's only been out for a little while. Nightfly did so well with him. I think it's the one hero I didn't actually kill, and he caused a lot of problems for me. So it was good.
Yeah, I think Zim is going to pose a very, very serious contender to the Alendir slot in a lot of people's warbands.
Yeah, yeah.
He's certainly doing it in mine. Like, I'm thinking about it really hard.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're running out of time before Nightfly has to go to work. So just we'll quickly touch on the next topic that George, you wanted to talk about. We updated a bunch of items. I think 3 of them are now free to buy. So you get them for free. There's a couple of questions around this. You still can't start the game with them. You need to actually buy them normally, like you normally would, either by killing the monster. So what I normally do, first monster I kill, I pick up the Gift of the Gods for free as a defensive item and buy an offensive item for the hero. Gift of the Gods is now free, and you spend the fate whenever you want someone to reroll something within 6 inches. It's quite powerful. The other one
keep in mind, you got to remind people that it's not just attack pools that you can force people to reroll. You can force a Soul Harvest reroll, which is incredibly clutch.
Yeah. Now, I've used it pretty much every game that I play. This is my tactic at the moment. It is a bit of a... It can be a trap where you're spending your fate, because it's a fate every time you want someone to reroll. And there's times where if they roll poorly and then they reroll and do really well, then you can't make them reroll that one, obviously. But it is good. It comes up clutch. I think it was the game against you, Nightfly, where I made you roll a 10 harvest twice, but you kept rolling it. Was it you or another game?
I don't remember.
Different game. What's a different game? Yeah.
I don't think so. I don't think gift came up too much in our game.
Yeah, okay. What are your thoughts on the free gift?
Okay, so I was first off, I loved the change, by the way. It's having those free defensive items gives you something to like. It kind of changes the way you think about how you're buying items. It also provides a lot of utility to that null stone that we were talking about earlier on.
Yeah.
But the big thing that it actually did for me was it kind of like opened my eyes to how powerful defensive items can be. Mm. So with my J-neck Warband specifically, because it's kind of like it does a lot of like AoE and splash damage. And then it kind of kills everyone in a turn or two after everyone starts getting pretty low. And to help get to that point, to that turn three and four where you start kind of taking over the game with all with your multiple damage sources is defensive items. So I've been actually, because of the free items, I've been focusing on buying actual defensive items such as Bloodsucker and Agi Boots. I'm prioritizing them over offensive items.
Right.
Well, I haven't actually been buying them as much, but it opened my eyes to kind of change my play style into a more defensive item focused selection.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's I introduced the change with Jeff, but I think the change was really good and it is warranted. I felt it just made more sense to make them use this way. They're still cost of fate every time I want to use them. The other one's Braces of Disruption. This one can be really clutch against someone like a Fazeel, or you just ignore a combat maneuver completely, or a Rakir, where you just stop the poison. So there's no, you just spend a fate and you ignore the combat maneuver. So I found this to be, this is only against the bearer, but you put this on someone like one of your weaker characters that can get decapped by Fazeel or blown up by Rakir. If you've got fate in your hand, they basically can't kill them. I think Gift of the Gods is getting a lot of attention. I think Braces is not getting enough. I have seen it. And I do take it if I'm playing one of those blow-up champions. Thoughts on that one?
It's really... Racers is really matchup dependent. Like, if you're up against a Rakir or a Fazeel or like a Nastario even, you probably want to think about getting it on someone if they're going to want to try and snipe out.
If I'm playing a Minotaur aggressor or Minotaur heroes in general, I would prefer to get the Braces of Disruption because they have low agility, which means forcing somebody to reroll a charge attack of 6 dice. The chances of them not getting something good and me getting value out of the Gift of the Gods is just not worth it.
Yeah.
So I would much rather just ignore the combat maneuver entirely because they get triggered really easily against Minotaurs.
Yeah.
And so if it depends on the stats of the hero. So I think, like, if Sky is walking around with Gift of the Gods, then that's pretty brutal because he can basically make it a lot. He can hang around near the soul pits, make it really hard for your opponent to soul harvest. And if they get a clutch soul harvest, you can force them to reroll it and they can end up having wasted an entire activation, essentially.
Yeah.
And he can also use it really viably against a attack pool because, you know, even with a charge attack, most people are only going to be coming in with 3 dice at best, right? And that's assuming he doesn't have cover.
Yeah.
And if they get lucky and they manage to roll, like a Thorgar comes in, manages to roll a J and a symbol against him to throw you off the shrine, that's worth your money forcing them to reroll that because the chances of them triggering another Thorgar throw on a 3 dice pool is, I mean, them's low odds.
Yeah, they are.
You know, you're really getting your value for money from Gift of the Gods there on someone like Sky, I would say.
Yeah. The other one that we changed was Astral Stasis Potion, which is
which
is free as well. And you can spend a fate, 1 use only, and you can't be targeted. Now, I've talked about this one with a guy like Zim, or one of those ones where you put him in dangerous position, like a Styx. You use this. If you do it the last activation of the turn before your opponent's last one, they basically can't target them. Start of a new turn, you can get the person out. Or if you've got like a Sky to pull them out or a Shan to pull them out. So yeah, I think that one, that's another one I don't think gets enough yet. I'm pretty sure it'll get used more over time. I'm interested in what you guys think as well.
Well, I think I might actually end up buying this one on my Soul Gazers on turn 1.
Yep.
Deploy them next to the effigy, walk up to the effigy, buy this, and then walk up to position to soul harvest next turn. I can, you know, especially if I have turn 1,
yeah,
I'm really going to be motivated to go for the top of 2 soul harvest to get an early lead. Yep. You go for the top of two Soul Harvest. You pop the Astral Stasis Potion. They can't snipe out your Soul Gazer, who's exposed because you just walked up to the field, right?
Yep.
And then that gives you one activation to send in one of your beefcakes to just body block the way, walk or just engage the enemy so that they can't, snipe out your Soul Gazer. And if they do put the effort in of going deep on your Soul Gazer, you activate the rest of your warband and you just collapse and just like triple gang that one hero that went in on your Soul Gazer.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's potentially you can set up some really powerful plays. And I think if you have first turn, if you have first activation, I think this is a very, very potentially powerful item that you can use to dictate the flow of the game.
Yeah, agreed. Right, so I think we're going to be near the end of time, unfortunately. So Nightfly, you're good to you're getting ready to go to work, I assume.
Yeah, I'm just about to say I was going to throw in a final comment and then say I got to head out.
Let's do that, and George and I will finish off.
All right. Yeah. So my final comment, one of the few ones that like if you are in a spot where you can buy a defensive item with like a ranged aggressor. Like if you're already buying like a Heartseeker from the effigy or a Ring of Power for an Astarial, you can go ahead and also grab this Astral Stasis because you're not going to have too many opportunities to pick up anything else, and they don't usually either have the fate to buy a second defensive item or anything like that. Like picking up an Astral Stasis on them can be pretty clutch because not for like turn two or even turn three, but like turn four when they're having to push up the board to go secure a kill.
Yeah,
you can do that and then pop that Astral Stasis, and now they can't be dove on nearly as easy.
That's a really good point. They
can't be targeted.
Yeah, that's activation.
So if you're doing Astarial, you want to give her the Heartseeker for Ring of Power first turn, just pick it up for free anyway. If you don't use it, doesn't matter. But it could be a clutch time late game where you've got fate where you can use it and keep her safe. That's a really good point.
Especially if you have to advance your ranged aggressor to get a kill on a low hit point hero who's like trying to run back to their effigy. Mm. You can go forward, get the kill, and then be safe in the knowledge that you have you're gonna activate your melee aggressor next and then just, save your ranged hero from getting assassinated or your sticks or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So that sounded like the alarm. So Nightfly is going to drop off the call. Thanks very much for joining us again. It was great to have you on the podcast.
It was awesome. I really enjoyed the three-way boys. I'll see you around.
Yeah, it was good.
All right. Nightfly. Take care, man.
Cheers.
Yep, bye.
All right. So George and I will just wrap up the podcast. Was there anything you actually want to talk about, George? Or you want to just...
I did kind of wanted to give people a heads up on why I've been gone for so long and why it's been difficult in actually recording episodes, because it's been like, I don't know, like 6 weeks or something since we recorded last. But I've recently started my surgical internship, and it's been amazing. I love it to death. I love just cutting so much. It's amazing. And holding people's organs in my hand, it's super cool.
Awesome.
But that also comes with the corresponding work schedule and the hours that you have to put in, which means that I don't have time during the week unless it's special, like today, because there's a national strike going on and everything. It's really hard to get the time, and then in the weekends, I have a lot of stuff that I have to do. I have to do a whole week's worth of stuff in 2 days on the weekends, and then it becomes hard to...
To be fair to you, I've only got certain strict times where I can actually record. So I'm not... You have pinged me a couple of times, and I've gone, look, I just can't do it at the moment. So it was really good today. Nightfly pinged me 10 minutes before you and said, you want to do a podcast tonight? And then you pinged me, let's get all three of us. Perfect. So, it was good. It was good to have you back, George. As I said to you, we'll get you on. I'm happy to do it as any time that we can mutually agree it's a good time to do it. In the meantime, I'll just churn some out with Nightflyer. But the podcast has got good. We've got a lot of people who like it, enjoy it. I get a lot of comments all the time, and we really appreciate the support and everyone's comments that they're enjoying it. So it always helps motivate us. We know that people are listening to it and getting something out of it. So it was good. I don't think there's many podcasts out there where you've got people from EU, one from NA, and one from Australia.
No, that's pretty rare. Oh yeah, speaking of other podcasts, I wanted to talk about our competition. So I was going through my podcast program and I was trying to doing my subscriptions, right? And when you type in Judgmental or Judgment Day, you know what all of the other podcasts are that come up?
What?
Religious ones? Christian Bible. Christian ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
religious ones. They're all like, what are you going to do on Judgment Day? Like, Judgment Day, oh my God.
So the interesting thing, right? So the Judgmental Facebook group is a closed group. So you have to apply to get in it. We would get, so we've got like 550 people in it, legitimate people. We have easily rejected over 1,000 religious institutions or people trying to join the group. So and I've got nothing against religious people at all, but the amount of people who just apply to join, if it was open, it'll be flooded. So I'm glad we made it closed. But yeah, we get that all the time.
We must get a lot of accidental listeners. Like, oh, let's see what these guys think about the good book. Like, wait a second.
100%. Because even our, we get tagged in biblical or Christian or whatever religion, not just Christian actually, just in religious posts where they tag judgment.
Hashtag judgment.
Yeah, they do. Or they at judgment in Facebook, and it's our page, and because the page is open, we've got like 3,500. Likes, but they're not all legit. I know they're not, because I look at the and we get tagged a lot in big sermons and speeches. And it's like, if they ever click through to it, they're gonna have a heart attack, right? Because we've got demons and like
yeah, exactly.
So anyway,
like, it's show them like doggy card or something.
I know. I mean, the game is completely fictional, and it's a fun game. It's got nothing to do with religion either way. But yeah, interesting that we are. We're slap bang in the middle of that. The reason why we called the iOS and the apps, Android app, Warband Commander, was because we had a lot of trouble trying to get judgment or anything in the name.
Idea.
Yep, so we went walking on. Anyway, it's a segue, interesting. So yeah. Okay, that was episode 23. Thank you very much for listening. It was so much fun to get George and Elias on at the same time. It was excellent. So hopefully we'll get to do it again sometime. And George, good to see you. Discord's going well. We've got so much mad chatter going on since all the people joined since JNAC.
It's been so crazy. Yeah. Ever since JNAC, we've had so many new people join, and I think it's just fantastic. Yeah. I think Adepticon is hopefully going to be just like that, like a whole bunch of people, whole bunch of new people, a crazily stacked Youngbloods tournament. I mean, I love that. That was probably my favorite thing to hear coming out of JNAC was
16
the fact
players
that
who bought the game.
Exactly, that you can fill up a 16-player tournament within 48 hours of conversion.
I
mean, maybe this, you know, this Bible podcast thing is something worth pursuing.
All right. Well, thank you for listening again, and we'll speak to you soon. Check us out. Like us on iTunes, that kind of stuff. Check us out on Discord and Facebook. You'll be able to find us on that in no time. And give us, if you want something you want us to talk about or a topic you want us to discuss, please send it through. So,
absolutely.
All right. Cheers, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you, George. And
thanks, man.
Good night.
Take care. Bye.